Did someone say our name five times? Because we're back, baby!
Ooh, spooky!
It's the Bitter End Podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And we're here for, we worked it out, our 12th season.
Ye gods, man, this has been too long? Not long enough.
Well, look, I don't know if anyone else has noticed, but the last, like, year or so has been a bit weird.
Yeah, I've noticed that, yes.
Mostly because you and me went from watching a movie together a week for, like, forever,
yeah,
to somehow just barely managing to watch three films over the course of a year and a half.
Glacial pace,
yes,
the Beastmaster season was, but we are back.
We're back for a new season. It's Candyman, baby!
Yeah! About time.
We're excited. There's a new movie out, the Nia DaCosta movie we've managed to avoid watching up until this point, and we are revisiting the franchise from the very start. And I'm super duper pumped.
I bet you are, because this is a Clive Barker joint, right?
Well, yes, it's based on one of the original Clive Barker short stories from the Books of Blood called The Forbidden. Now, I have read that story and really liked it. Have you read that one?
I have not read that one.
It's a good one. It's very different from the film, because I have seen this film once before when I was a wee baby podcaster.
Me too. I can remember nothing about it.
I remember being very scared. And I remember also being just at the right age where when Virginia Madsen's name came on the screen at the start, I pissed myself laughing because I thought her name was Vagina Madsen.
Ha ha!
I was that age.
Okay, very good, very good.
And this is going to be particularly interesting because we've had Ms. Madsen on the podcast before. She's our main female lead in Highlander 2.
Oh, yes.
We have had Tony Todd before from Beastmaster.
Mr. Eye of Braxis himself.
Yeah, from one Todd to another, big fan.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to get in here. But yeah, as you say, even though this is based on a Clive Barker joint, that story is very, very different.
Mm.
Very completely different. It's set in, I want to say, Liverpool, where Clive Barker is from.
Makes sense.
It doesn't really have... There's none of this, like, oh, you say his name five times in America. There's none of that.
Mm.
He's just like a bloke in, like, a tower block.
Okay, well, the trailer we watched for this, it looks pretty spooky. Feels like it's kind of like a detective spooky story. You've got a hard-boiled gumshoe lady who's trying to crack the case of... And everyone in this trailer says Candyman an absolute shit ton.
We need to be careful. How many times have we said it on the podcast now? Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's quite
difficult to do a podcast about the film about the Man of Candy without saying the name of said film or character.
It was quite interesting watching the trailer because there's a bit where they're like, oh, you have to say his name five times. And both me and Tom at the exact same time went, I thought it was three.
I think we're getting confused with Beetlejuice.
Yeah, it probably is. So five feels like it gives you a lot more leeway. We've probably done, like, maybe four. And anyway, if he turns up, we've got some...
Well, we're not looking in a mirror. Uh-oh.
There is a mirror right here.
There is a mirror right here. Okay, it's going to be like Macbeth. It's going to be like the Scottish play.
Yes.
Like the Man of Bees. But I didn't actually get, like, a great deal from the trailer other than, like, there's a mystery. There's this man of candy who is spooking people and people are dying. And he was maybe once someone who was wronged and murdered in a horrible way. He's come back from the dead. But it was... bit of a mood vibe piece, didn't give me lots of, like, plot and story.
Yeah, but I mean, bits of it just look so phenomenally scary. They hold back a lot of Tony Todd from the trailer. You see his hook for a hand, you see his face as graffiti around the Cabrini Green sort of estate or whatever the building is, and then, like, you get, like, just a little tiny glimpse of him
in the distance
and during the day,
and that feels very kind of Hellraiser-ish, like,
yeah,
getting big Cenobite kind of vibes the menace of this man just standing still.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do remember being a kid and having heard, like, her, you know, Candyman as a story, it's about, like, folklore and the kind of the sort of Halloween tales that, like, kids tell and stuff, and, you know, Bloody Mary and the, you know, there's that story that people tell about, like, the driver with the hook for a hand and it gets
stuck,
you know, all of that. So I'd heard all of this story and I knew what the character was, and I remember being pretty convinced that, like, this was a story that pre-existed the film, you know? This is what I thought. Like, the story is as old as time and they've finally done a film of it.
It feels feels very much like that. And like when you were a kid, like, you know, the idea of like, don't say the name of the Schmandy Schman.
If you're lucky, you do it three times and John Candy shows up and you're like, I love John Candy.
My God. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
Cool runnings. Let's hang out and talk. Oh man, Uncle Buck. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the Candy Man I would want to show up.
I know. It's the Yellow King shows up. You'd be fucked.
So yeah, I guess without further ado, we're gonna have to slam in. Now, listeners, I want to reveal to you the slightly unusual circumstances that we're going to be doing this podcast in, because ordinarily we're aware we made you wait too long for Beastmaster. So what we're trying to do is the whole season in one day, if we can.
I mean, I don't know if we'll do it, but we're just going to try and watch as many Candyman films in a day as we can.
Yeah, and you will hear...
Sorry, Schmandyman.
Schmandyman, sorry. You're going to hear us sort of descending from one episode to the other. Right now it is about 10 a.m. We're about to slam into Monsieur Candy. And then we'll do the next one. And then if we're still alive, we might do the next one.
Two Candy, two man.
But Thomas Denny, Mr. Denny Mann, would you care to play the IMDb guessing game? So we're here to discuss Candyman from 1992.
Solid year.
Directed by British man Bernard Rose,
okay.
Who had previously done a movie called Paper House, which scared the living bejesus out of me as a kid. Next one will be Candyman Farewell to the Flesh from 1995, followed by Candyman Day of the Dead from 1999, and then finally the 2021 Candyman.
Lovely.
But the ball that started it all.
Yes.
What would you...
Monsieur Candy. Yeah. I mean, this is quite a well thought of horror franchise. People like the character. It's the first in the series. It's going to do pretty well. That said, we all know that horror doesn't usually go above a 7 on IMDb. 6.8?
Oh my God, man, 6.7!
Oh, so close.
So close. But don't worry, it's a long day. We've got plenty to play for.
That is, yes, I'll play again in the next round. But that's a solid score. I canny wait.
Canny wait. Shall we slam in?
Yes, please, monsieur.
Monsieur Candy, aujourd'hui. I don't even know what aujourd'hui means.
John Candy. I don't want to risk it.
It's too scary. It's too scary.
Anyway.
Oh my God. Tom, can I say something?
Yes, please.
I love Candyman brackets 1992.
It's fucking solid, man. Right?
That film is so tight. There is so much to enjoy about it.
Yeah. I mean, straight off the bat, when you go into it, great score.
Yeah, Philip Glass, this incredible sort of choral gothic piano, and then like this big organ thing.
But for 1992 as well, that it hadn't been lured into just like, I don't know, doing a... I mean, as much as I love like a Dream Warriors Dokken track.
Candyman!
Yeah, exactly. They didn't, you know, get Motorhead in or something to do that, or like for Alice Cooper, that it's like very atmospheric.
So nice.
Virginia Madsen, fucking great.
She's incredible from start to finish. Tony Todd, you don't see a lot of the Toddster, but like he is pure gold when, you know, he's incredible.
Yes. Good. And also just, it's grim.
It's really grim.
It's really grim.
And that really like... It felt. It reminded me of a time when I was really young and first getting into like watching scary films. Of like when just the idea of watching a horror film felt like transgressive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And where the film itself was scary, like not just the villain in it, or I might see, you know, a scary scene, but just like, I was scared of the existence of the film, you know what I mean? Where it's like I might go to a friend's house and they'd have a copy of something on VHS, and I'm scared that there is a VHS copy in the house. Like the film is evil in some way.
I think this, I mean, going back to Clive Barker, I remember like going to, you know, the video shop, right? And, you know, you'd be looking around and on the top shelf would be Hellraiser.
Yeah.
And you'd see that image of Pinhead with the box and just be like,
no.
No.
Absolutely no way.
That's absolute no fucking way. That is, you know, when you're like 10, that is terrifying. And this film is grim and scary in a way that, like, this isn't your Friday the 13th.
No.
This is not a Freddy Krueger. This is much more close to Hellraiser, right? In that it is, like, just, like, yeah, just slowly kind of worms its way in and just makes you feel kind of just a bit more uncomfortable.
Yeah, it feels dangerous in some way that I really, really like. And a lot of that is Clive Barker. Like, most Clive Barker stuff has that in spades because the dude is just a beautiful madman. Yeah. And, like, his vision of what, like, scary things are is just unlike anyone else's. Mm. My God. But there's something more because, like, this, the film is, Barker's involvement in it is limited from the sounds of it. You know, he wrote the short story and then this dude, Bernard Rose, like, ran with it. But it, like, it's the setting, it's this kind of the grimy apartment blocks that they're in.
And much more of an investigation kind of movie. It's not, like, I guess, like, Candyman is thrown in with your Jason Voorhees's and your Freddy Krueger, you know, as those kind of, like, classic monster baddies of the 80s and 90s. But like Pinhead, he's not... It's not a slasher.
It's not a slasher, is it? And I don't... It
takes a long time for someone to get killed.
Yeah. Hellraiser might be a slasher, but Pinhead isn't a slasher villain in a weird way. And
it's Uncle Frank, right?
Well, kind of, yeah. This movie, maybe it's a slasher movie, and certainly in some of the murders are kind of filmed in that way, but, like, it's more of a ghost story.
Yeah.
Way more of a ghost story. And speaking of story, I guess we should probably wind things back, relax, reset the tracks.
We set the scene with this beautiful helicopter sort of like panning shot over like Chicago's like main highways with this Philip Glass score.
Yeah.
And instantly I'm like, oh, okay, this isn't fucking around. Like, this looks cool. It sounds spooky. It's not, you know, got that kind of, like, pulpy kind of vibe that you would get from other films of this era. And we've got...
There's a voiceover from Tony Todd.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And at this point in the movie, straight away, we don't necessarily know who this is that's speaking, but he's got this awesome, like, deep voice. They will say, I have shed innocent blood, but what's blood for if not for shedding?
Yes.
That is some... That feels Clive Barker-y.
Absolutely.
And then we settle in, like, into... Virginia Madsen is interviewing some student, and they're talking about urban legends.
Yes.
And this student is telling her the tale of, like, a friend's friend's brother's sister's boyfriend's friend. And how this babysitter, who was on a date with Ted Raimi... gets murdered by the Candyman.
Yeah, and we kind of flash back to that story that the babysitter is just like basically like this like greasy biker dude shows up and is like, hey babe, let's do some things that people do in 80s films and that gets them killed. Okay, all right. They go into the bathroom and she's like, kind of like, hey, we've come here to have sex, but how about I tell you this horrific story about a child being murdered or something?
Yeah.
And they look in the mirror and she tells the legend of saying Candyman five times and they say it four times. They freak out. They kind of stop. And then she's like, hey, go downstairs and slip into something more comfortable. I'm just going to stay up here and say Candyman once more. And then I'm going to die. And that's what happens. And then we cut back to our main character, Helen, played by Virginia Madsen. And this is like, you know, she's been interviewing the students with her colleague as well. Like they're doing like a...
Bernadette is the name of the colleague.
Yes, they're doing like a thesis. They're working on it together and they're kind of like knocking about, talking to people about spooky things. And like they keep on like hearing these stories about like Candyman or like grim urban legends, and they're just fucking chain smoking cigarettes and just finding it kind of quite funny. They're not really taking it serious. You know, they think of it as just ghost stories.
And as far as they know, the story of Candyman is that he's some sort of boogeyman. And the story seemed to be centered around this housing project called Cabrini Green. And that's where the stories are emanating from. And she becomes particularly interested because there is a recent murder of somebody named Ruthie Jean in Cabrini Green. And the rumours around that part of Chicago are that this was the work of the Candyman, that he killed her with a hook.
Yes, indeed. So, she meets, there's like some cleaners who work at the university, and they, one of them lives around that area. So she's kind of like, oh, okay, we got a lead. We're going to go and follow this. And she kind of finds that there's like some weird parallel between Cabrini Green and her building, that like the fancy building that she lived in was built as a housing project like Cabrini Green, but it was made fancy, whereas Cabrini Green wasn't. And there's this whole weird kind of thing of like, if you take the medicine cabinet off, there's like a secret door into the next door's thing, and that all had something to do with like the murder of
this
Ruthie
is how
Green.
She reckons Ruthie Jean got murdered, because there's this hidden passage behind the medicine cabinets that connect two apartments, like when you get a hotel room with adjoining doors. Now, we listeners were watching this film and Tom was like, oh, that's very convenient. What sort of a building would be built like that? I looked it up. That was an actual thing.
Oh, okay, right.
These buildings actually had that, and there were murders committed using the passages between the...
Oh,
the
well, that's a terrible, terrible, terrible design flaw.
Yeah, and unbelievably terrifying.
Yeah.
That there's a secret, like, tunnel behind your bathroom mirror that connects to the next apartment.
Yeah.
And when she's showing her friend Bernadette this, Bernadette's like, we shouldn't be looking in there. What if someone's in the bathroom? And she's like, oh, it's fine. The apartment's, like, empty.
Yeah.
That's scarier.
Yeah, don't do it. Just don't do it. And then this is going to set off, they're going to go to investigate Cabrini Green and, like, you know, do a bit more. Like, they're like, okay, this is great. We've got some active live research that we could be doing into this legend.
Yeah.
Helen also has a husband who's kind of a bit of a douchebag. He's another, he's a lecturer at the university talking about urban legends. Played by that guy that was John Connor's foster dad in Terminator 2 that gets stabbed through the mouth while he's drinking some milk. He's a douchebag. There's a bit where, like, there's a jump scare in it, which is just literally him being drunk, jumping into bed with Helen. and he's just like, it's late and I'm smashed.
He, like, grabs hold of her in this bear hug so she can't get away. And he literally just says, yeah, I'm smashed. Brilliant.
And he's quite obviously boning one of his students. Anyway, back to the spooky mystery at hand.
She snoops around, and there's some quite good stuff with, you know, you get some potential, like, gang lads who are, like, outside the Cabrini Green building.
It's very urban spooky.
Yeah.
It's, like, kind of, like, the fear of just being kind of like, oh, no, my God, I'm in, like, a sort of, like, a lower-income area, and I might get mugged. But then also the building is just very dilapidated, and it's interesting, an interesting take on the spooky haunted house, right?
It's not exactly, yeah, because it's like the building is like this living organism. It's everything's covered in graffiti, and you know, because this film's story is all about, like, oral history and how the stories that people tell each other about you know, the area and stuff, they keep these things alive, and the building is just sort of dripping with, like, all of these names and nicknames and tags and all these little clues that something's going on.
And it's kind of like, what are you more scared of? Are you scared of, like, the spooky ghost story? Are you scared of just, like, literally this the reality of this building,
which is scary, especially for somebody like her. She's in her early 30s. She's quite
very well to do.
Yeah, and she's clearly out of her element. It's a different context, but it kind of reminded me of the opening scene of The Howling, when you've got that nice lady who has to go down to the porn store. And there's all of these horrible, like, porn men.
Yes, it's fish out of water, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And she's poking around. She's got a camera. She's taking pictures of everything, being like, oh, God, look at how grim it is. Oh, I'm glad I don't live here. Yeah. Like, click, click, click. And she stumbles across a big abandoned section where, there's this amazing bit where she crawls through a hole in the wall, and we see the other side of it when she comes out. And it's a big graffitied picture of Tony Todd's face, and she's, like, crawling out of his mouth.
Yeah, and he's, like, howling in anger.
anguish. Absolutely incredible. And then on the floor, and this is never even really explained, that she finds a pile of sweets that someone's been stuffing razor blades into and has just left. And so this then, because that's an urban legend, right? About you've got to be careful on Halloween because someone's been putting razor blades into them.
Because... So he's called the Candyman. It's never actually, as far as I'm aware, explained why he is called the Candyman.
I think I always assumed that it's because of honey and honey's sweet, and he was killed by bees, which we'll get to later.
But that is still fairly... feels quite tenuous,
yeah,
right?
I mean, absolutely. And that's one of the things that the film's added. Like in the Clive Barker book, he's not called the Candyman. He doesn't even have a name.
Right, right.
And the story's called The Forbidden. So I feel like this is a thing where someone... I don't know, came up with a name for a film and then they had to
figure out the rest later. Yeah.
Because it's a good name.
Yeah. So she's snooping around. Yeah, she finds all this spooky kind of shit. And then she goes and talks to one of the residents of the housing block. She's like a young mum with a big barking dog. And she tells a bit more about how Ruthie Jean got killed. And, you know, they called for the cops and nobody came because, like, this community is just completely kind of like, basically, like, the cops don't care. And she's like, yes, the Candyman did it. Like, everyone in this building believes that the Candyman is a thing.
Yeah, and she, I kind of got the impression here that she doesn't even necessarily think that the Candyman is anything supernatural. Like maybe he's just a bloke, right?
Well, this is the thing that, like, so it is this urban legend, and then later on in Helen's investigations, she's talking to this young boy and finding out more about the Candyman, and here's another story about a victim of the Candyman, maybe in, like, the 60s or 70s, at a public toilet that's across from the building, and this kid is saying, like, oh, yeah, like, this kid went in just for, like, a moment, and then someone went in and found that the kid had been just, like, mutilated, and the guy went insane who found this kid.
And his dick in the toilet.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. And, like, this is what happened to the guy in the babysitter story, that when the girl got killed, his hair went white just from fear of seeing the grim things that had happened. And while Helen's investigating this public toilet, the Candyman comes in, but it's not Tony Todd. It is just this other guy who lives there, and he's got a hook... because the legend is that the Candyman has a hook for a hand. And this seems like... this is just, like, a local gangster who has assumed the role of the identity of the Candyman to, you know, become more frightening to the local people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, like if a local gangster started calling himself Dracula.
Yes, yeah, right? Just to be even more scary and intimidating. And they bop Helen over the head and it's like, fuck off, stop snooping around.
Yeah, and this is shortly after she's investigated this public toilet where this kid supposedly got killed, and she's like, it's so rank and gross and disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing scene, but she's just like looking, like in there, it's just like, oh my God, this is the worst place I've ever been. And she lifts up the lid of the toilet where there was supposed to be this guy's dick, and it's full of bees!
Oh no!
And like, honestly, not on my top three list of things to find in a toilet.
Yeah.
So,
but would not be something I would like to find in a absolutely
no.
Not.
I want to interject because we've skipped over the backstory of Monsieur Candie himself, which was she hears at a douchebag dinner. It's like she goes to dinner with her douchebag husband and his douchebag intellectual friends, and they're like, "Oh, we hear that you're writing a paper about the Candyman," and she's like, "Yeah, we're gonna bury you.
Your paper's shit."
And then it turns out that she literally at no point has even thought to look up anything about the Candyman.
She's
and
done no research.
It's like, do you know the story of the Candyman? No, I've just been taking some pictures of graffiti and looking at toilets full of bees. And the guy tells her,
Candyman was the son of a slave. His father had amassed a considerable fortune from designing a device for the mass producing of shoes after the Civil War. Candyman had been sent to all the best schools and had grown up in polite society. He had a prodigious talent as an artist and was much sought after when it came to the documenting of one's wealth and position in society in a portrait. Well, it was in this latter capacity that he was commissioned by a wealthy landowner to capture his daughter's virginal beauty. Well, of course, they fell deeply in love and she became pregnant. Poor Candyman. Father executed a terrible revenge.
They chopped off his right hand so he can't be a painter, which is why he's then got the hook. But I don't understand why they bothered to do that, because then the next thing they do is they...
Cover him in bees,
and he gets stung to death.
And then they set him on fire.
And they set him on fire. So it's like, you could have left the hand. Like, that wasn't the burn you think it was.
Yeah, right.
But so that's why we... Okay, so we've got these little disparate elements. We've got... He doesn't have a right hand. He's got a hook instead. Bees, which is kind of a, he doesn't really kill anyone with bees, but he has bees
around
him.
There's some nice bee reveals later on.
And then the fact that they burned him, which is setting up something, because as the movie progresses, we see that in the courtyard outside Cabrini Green, the locals are sort of slowly building this big bonfire out of trash.
Yes. Here, look, this is Chekhov's bonfire, they say.
Yes.
Looking at the camera and winking. So, yeah, then Helen gets fake Candyman arrested.
Yep.
And she's like, yeah, this is great. Her friend is like, oh, you thought some of your photos that you were taking around Cabrini Green got smashed, but I've managed to, like, save some of those.
Smashed like her husband, Trevor.
Right. And she's like, this is great. This is all good. Everything's looking up for Helen. Boop, boop, boobity, boop. I'm walking through a car park. Boop, boop, boobity, boop. Oh, there's a Candyman. You get this scene where she's just like in the car park and then you hear, Helen. And she's like, yeah, you what? Like, booming, terrifying voice. Echo. And then just like, and so then she's confronted by the real Candyman, who is... just in broad daylight, standing across this deserted car park from her, and he's walking towards her and basically saying, like, he wants her to be his new victim. And she's frozen in fear. There's tears rolling down her cheeks.
He's got this very seductive way about him. I think this scene is, like, pretty masterful, if I'm honest. It's set in the middle of the day in a car park, broad daylight, scary as balls. He's got this incredible coat with this sort of fur hem.
Yeah.
And it's what I think works really well about it is we had to see the imitation version of him to then see how much scarier the real one is. So the guy that beat her up in the toilet, he had a hook and a leather jacket.
Very similar.
He was a scary guy. But, like, the fact that we see the fake version first, like a pale shadow, and then as soon as you see the real one, even from a distance, you're just like...
Oh, no.
We feel the realness of it in a way that I don't think it would have had the same impact if we hadn't seen an imitator first, you know?
Yes, and he's coming for Helen, and I think it's that basically, like, it feels like there is a bit of a Freddy Krueger vibe with Candyman. That basically, I think that Helen snooping around the tower block and getting the fake Candyman arrested has diminished the fear of the Candyman myth.
Because now the locals are going to be like, right, Candyman's no more gone. Candyman. He was that guy and he got arrested. The real Candyman, Tony Todd, says, I am the writing on the wall, the whisper in the classroom. Without these things, I am nothing.
So it's a very, like, Freddy versus Jason.
Yes.
Where Freddy needs to make people feel afraid of him so that he can gain his power. Like, he's like this memory, and if people stop talking about him, he will disappear.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, right, Helen, so I'm going to murder you, I guess.
It has to be her, because she's the one that debunked it. And this is cool.
Because she also, crucially, like, earlier on in the film, says Candyman 5 times, but he doesn't appear.
He doesn't choose
Why is that? Well, I guess we're going to find out in a little bit. And then she's, like, terrified. And then we're going to hard cut. She's in Cabrini Green. She's in the bathroom of the young mother that she interviewed. She's, like, just wakes up on the floor, covered in blood. She's like, oh, fuck, this is grim. She stomps out of the bathroom, finds the severed dog's head.
severed dog's head, and we
blood
can just
everywhere.
Hear so much screaming.
Yeah.
There's so, not from her, there's someone else is just screaming, screaming, screaming.
She finds a meat cleaver on the floor. She's like, I better pick that up.
Let me just check, make sure I get all my fingerprints
on
that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then she goes into the next room and she finds the mum and she's like standing over the cot screaming. And you kind of think that, oh shit, maybe the baby's dead, because we've already established in this film that like Candyman in the babysitter story killed the babysitter and the baby.
Yeah.
And so it's like, they're not fucking around. This is grim stuff. The baby hasn't been killed, but the baby is gone. And the police burst in. And it's like the Candyman has just framed Helen for some fucked up shit.
Because the other thing that happens is the mum, when she sees Helen and is like, what are you doing here? You killed my dog. You've taken my baby. She's like, give me my fucking baby back. Attacks Helen. And Helen just like instinctively, she's all groggy. She just fucking meat cleavers the poor woman in the arm. Like at the exact instant that the cops are turning up. And she's like, oh, it's not what it looks like.
Yep. And then Helen gets taken to prison, and there she's going to meet friend of the podcast, Rusty Schwimmer.
Love some Rusty Schwimmer. Eagle-eared listeners may remember that Rusty Schwimmer was our connecting link between Highlander 2 and Jason Goes to Hell, and she was kind enough to speak to us on a bonus episode of the podcast where we interviewed her and found out that she's real-life best friends with Virginia Madsen, which is why it's quite nice that in this scene, which is quite a hard, uncomfortable scene where Virginia Madsen's character, Helen, is very upset. She's covered in blood and she's being made to strip for the police search by this very sort of surly and stern female police officer, that it kind of takes the edge off that watching this, we know, oh, that's her actual real life best friend. So she's probably like way more comfortable with it than she might otherwise be. How lovely.
Yes, lovely to see Rusty. Helen's in some shit right now.
Yep.
She gets like taken out of jail, out of prison by her douchey husband. And it's just like, oh, fuck. There's like swarms of reporters outside. You know, like she's like, everyone's like, where's the baby? And yeah, it's not looking good for her. She's going through some of the slides that she took in Cabrini Green. She's seeing that, like, in a photo that she took in a mirror, that she's like enhance, but like it's with a slide projector. So she's just like turning the aperture a little bit, and it's kind of like, oh my god, the Candyman was right behind me the whole time. And I think this is the point where Candyman appears again.
He busts through the mirror.
Yes.
She's like sitting around her house. She's clearly depressed by this horrible thing that's happened. She's just drinking a beer on her own. And she's like wandering around. She goes to look in the bathroom mirror. And like, maybe does she say it? I can't remember.
Doesn't say anything. She just looks. And then suddenly a hook hand just goes, blah!
Smashes
like,
through
oh,
the mirror.
Oh shit, we're doing this now. Oh fuck, run.
And it's terrifying. And he says to her, your death will be a tale to frighten children, to make lovers cling closer.
Yeah, and so he's basically stalking her around her flat. And
Bernadette, her friend, turns up, and she's like, Helen's on the floor, she's been partially hooked and she's bleeding, and she's like, no, don't come in, Bernadette. And Bernadette's like, I'm just coming in. She's like, no, don't come in. And she's like, I'm coming in right now, here I come. And Bernadette gets like hooked to bloody death by Candyman. But what's amazing is we don't see it, we only hear it, and we just see Helen's face as she's listening to it happen. And the sound work on this is, oh my god, it is mwah. Listen to it. Like, it's so frightening. It's so much better than just not even seeing it. And later on, we see Bernadette's body. We see the end result.
It's grim.
It's very grim, because like they've done makeup work on her face to just show that all of the blood has been drained out of her body.
Yeah,
like,
she's gray.
Like a bloodless grey husk. And, oh, it's a lot.
It's a spicy meatball. Cut to Helen in a mental hospital.
Now, Tom, at this point, can I interject? How you doing, buddy?
Doing okay.
Because listeners, we're watching this at 10 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, we had some we had some
prosecco.
We had some prosecco. It just kind of took the edge off.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way to start your day. It's certainly one of the grimmer horror films that I've watched.
We've watched a lot of movies for this podcast, not all of them good, right?
Yeah,
and
this is a really good film.
Yeah, this is easily one of the best films we've watched for this podcast. Also one of the genuinely most scary.
Yes, it's not got the highest body count, but the moments of gore are, you know, it's grisly. And even when you don't see it, this film is very visceral. And it's not played like a Friday the 13th in like a, look at that dickhead.
Yeah.
Getting fucking stabbed in the eye with whatever.
There's nothing cartoony about it.
No, and it's all horrible and uncomfortable, and you're kind of like, oh shit, you know, like there's no one in it that you really kind of, you're not like, oh good, they killed Bernadette, fuck her. It's like you're like, oh shit, not Bernadette. She didn't deserve that at all. But as
you pointed out, Tom, what a good friend. At this point, like, Helen's basically been found guilty with absolutely no alibi of possibly kidnapping a baby, definitely beheading a dog.
And just meat-cleavering a woman
a woman. And her friend Bernadette is still coming around with flowers, being like, you're right, hon.
Yeah, how you doing?
Why'd you do that with that dog, eh?
Yeah, we got to finish our paper.
Let's have a natter, shall we?
Yeah, right. No!
So Helen's been institutionalized. She's strapped to a gurney, and Candyman is floating horizontally above her. There's some wire work in this film that is maybe not so good. I can't tell if the wire work is amazing. So Tony Todd is a big lad, and there's all these scenes where, like, Candyman is kind of meant to float around, like he's this sort of weightless. There's quite a cool bit where he sort of is suddenly sucked backwards out a window. But the wire work is quite Peter Pan.
It's tricky because, like you say, like he's meant to look weightless, but it looks like he weighs a lot.
Yeah, and he's like dangling right above sort of waifish Virginia Madsen.
And he's like, give us a kiss, Virginia Madsen.
Bah, 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 full of bees.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, what does this guy really want from Virginia Madsen? You know, like everyone else, seemingly he just shows up and gores. Whereas with her, he's after something more from her.
She's the key to his sustained immortality, right? He needs to live on in infamy, and he needs people to sort of talk his name in whispers in order to survive. But I think he recognises that, you know, he's maybe got something similar to offer her, if only things go a certain way.
So she turns out that Helen has been in this institution for a month.
Yep.
She's like, what? Like, she's just been like doped up. And at this point, I'm like, how is that baby still alive? Is Candyman giving the baby milk?
Because a baby
cannot survive off nothing, right? Anyway, he's just feeding it bees.
I mean, when you've got a hook for a hand as well, you can't hold the baby and...
yeah, right? Fuck. So there's this fucking brutal scene where Helen is in with her, you know, the psychiatrist or what have you, and he's questioning her, and then there's a mirror in the room, and she looks at the mirror and says Candyman 5 times, and there's a beat, and then fucking Tony Todd just basically sticks his hook up this dude's ass and pulls it up through the back of his neck, and it is brutal.
It goes on forever!
Yeah, because he's just kind of like, it's kind of realistic, and the kind of like, if you were to try and pull a hook through the entire length of someone's body, it would take a lot of brute force and would take a while. It's not just like a Jason Voorhees machete straight through. It's a... And she's just strapped to this, like, wheelchair, just like, oh, shit!
Have you ever made a spatchcock chicken?
It's like that.
It's like that, where you cut the spine out and then flatten it. That's what happens to the doctor. And when I make a spatchcock chicken, it takes quite a while.
Yeah,
and
right?
I'm using scissors, and I'm like, I've got 2 hands.
Yeah.
And this guy's just like, fucking hell.
So that's brutal. And then Candyman fucks off, but it's kind of like, you're in even more trouble now, Helen. And then she kind of climbs out through a window...
Yeah,
and then
she
comes in
inches
through
along the side of the building, through the next window, immediately knocks the nurse over, accidentally smacks her head on the floor, and is like, stop killing people, Helen.
Yeah, and then she escapes, goes back to her apartment, finds out her douchebag husband has moved it, has had his bit on the side move in, and they're repainting.
Yeah, they're painting the whole apartment a disgusting salmon pink.
Yeah, and then...
But this is quite good because, like, you see how scared Trevor's side piece is of Virginia Madsen.
Yes.
Madsen. You know, she's come home and this sort of younger model girl is... She's, like, terrified of her. So already Virginia Madsen is becoming a bit of a villain. Well, not a villain, but she's occupying a similar
space. Like, the husband doesn't believe that she didn't do... Everyone thinks that she's
a
murderer.
So now she's becoming, like, almost this very localised urban legend of, like, oh, but if Virginia Madsen comes home, you know, she's crazy. She beheaded a dog.
Yeah, and she kind of pops in just to kind of... You have that scene, and then she goes back to Cabrini Green.
She's on her ass to go.
She's going there to go and try and find Candyman, find the baby.
Which she does. She finds Candyman asleep on the floor. I like... Interesting to me that he sleeps.
Yes.
I thought that was quite interesting. He's there. We get, like, maximum Clive Barker-ness, where Candyman says to her, oh, like, be my victim. The pain shall be exquisite.
Yes, classic stuff.
Yeah.
She hooks him, but then she basically kind of offers herself... The deal is you die and the baby...
The baby lives instead.
Baby
and that's
lives.
That seduction element of him, like, being my victim. And it's not... This is where it kind of becomes more apparent. It's not... He doesn't want to kill her because he likes killing. It's not like he's Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers. And... He's not even really doing it for revenge, like Jason Voorhees kills for supposed revenge. He's killing it because literally he needs these incidents and he needs people to tell the stories of the killings in order to be alive.
Yes.
That's like the only way he can sustain his existence. And from his point of view, at least, it's fine because as his victim, Helen will also live forever in infamy.
So, I mean, there's an extra connection to Helen, which gets revealed around here. We get a cool B reveal where his coat opens up and you can see his rib cage and he's made of bees and he's got bees coming out of his mouth and there's bees all over Helen's face. And you're kind of like, this is 1992. These are real bees.
I have some facts about the bees.
Yes.
Because, yeah, they have this big French kiss, but his mouth is full of bees. So they had to make sure those bees, Tom, in the film, they're only 12 hours old.
Wow.
Because that is how old bees need to be in order to look like bees, but not have full sting venom.
Right.
So that's bee fact number one. Those bees were 12 hours old.
Okay.
Such little tiny baby bees.
Yeah.
Fact number two, Tony Todd negotiated, as part of his contract, he would get a $1,000 bonus every time he got stung by a bee.
Yeah, good.
Oh, apparently over the course of the entire franchise, $26,000 is what he got.
Yep, fair.
Fun fact number three, when Virginia Madsen read this part of the script, she said to Bernard Rose, the director, just so you know, I am allergic to bees. And he said, no, you're not. And she said, no, yeah, I definitely am. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. Sign the contract. We'll take it out. He wouldn't take it out. So then he was like, we'll get you tested. There's no way you're actually allergic to bees. It's a very, very rare thing. Got tested. Yeah, quite allergic to bees.
Oh, wow.
Still did it anyway.
Jesus, fuck. This is someone with an EpiPen just on standby.
Fuck!
Jesus. And it's in all of this weird kind of erotic bee torture that Candyman is like, it was always you, Helen.
Yeah.
And there's this mural on the... There's lots of murals around of Candyman's grim murder. And it seems like Helen is in the mural. And we're like, oh, Helen is basically the woman that Candyman fell in love with 100 and whatever years ago. And so... This adds, like, another weird kind of wrinkle. You know, you've got this kind of, like, Freddy Krueger-esque wrinkle with the having to live on in infamy, and then there's this kind of...
Well, that's a plotline from Dracula, isn't
it?
Where it's like, oh, you're the reincarnation of my... This was the bit I didn't love. I could have done without that. It kind of undermined a lot of the other stuff about the urban legends and how it was her. It needed to be her because she was the one who debunked it and stopped making people afraid of him.
Yes, it then becomes this thing that actually he is in love with Helen and he is going to murder her so that then they can be Mr. and Mrs. Candyman.
Yeah, Candyman and Candywoman.
Yes.
I now declare you Candyman and Candywife.
Yes, exactly. The Candymans are here, darling.
Oh, my God. Jeff Candyman.
Right. Bring out the bees. Anyway, you've got that, and then...
Wait, I've got one more riff on Jeff Candyman coming around for dinner.
Okay.
Could I take your coat, put it on the hook? No, it's all right, brought my own.
Hey! Anyway, my...
That was definitely worth interrupting you for.
That was great. Oh, sorry, my coat's full of bees. Anyway, we then get to Chekhov's bonfire.
We get to Chekhov's bonfire. And
the baby's in there.
The baby is in the bonfire. And she crawls in to try and get the baby out. and Candyman's in there as well. Now, all of the citizens of Cabrini Green come out and light the bonfire. I am unclear. Do they know she's in there?
No, so the little boy that was helping her out earlier on, she's been walking around this whole time with a hook.
Mm.
And she kind of climbs into the bonfire, and what the boy sees is just the hook poking out. So he doesn't know that it is her. He thinks that it is the Candyman that has gone in because she's been carrying around this hook.
Mm.
So it's a case of mistaken identity.
Okay, and they're all like, burn the Candyman, burn the Candyman. But she's in there, Virginia Manson's in there, she's found the baby's fine, she's trying to get the baby out, and Candyman's in there, he gives her a big hug, and she's like, let me go, and he's like, I can't, we're already dead. You know, and this is how we live in infamy. And there is so much fucking fire, man.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
ridiculous how much fire there is. And she stabs him in the chest with like a big burning piece of wood, and he's like, no, being stabbed in the chest with a burning piece of wood, my one weakness.
He burns up. She burns up. Like, she's crawling at this bonfire, and her hair just goes up like...
Yeah, and then she's like bald-headed, covered in all these scars, but the baby is fine. And the baby's mum is like, give me that baby. Next thing we see, it's the funeral, and Trevor, her asshole husband, is there with the side piece, and it's just them and like one of their douchebag mates. And the dude giving the eulogy is just like, well, look, she did some bad stuff, but she tried her best. Let's not yeah. judge her too hard. And then all of the citizens of Cabrini Green show up, and the kid has got Candyman's hook. And he drops it in her open grave, and then they just all walk off.
And it's like, don't put that in there. She would not want that.
And I thought that was going to be the end of the film, but then we get one last little coda with Trevor and his side piece back at the apartment.
Trevor is in the toilet being sad Trevor. I think he's feeling just a little bit guilty about what happened to Helen. And the girlfriend is outside being like, hey, babe, do you want to come and help me make a salad? And he's like, no, I'm in here being sad. And she's pretty pissed about this. She's like, oh, God, your stupid murdering wife is dead now. Just get on with it. Come and help me make a salad. And she pulls out literally the biggest knife you've ever fucking seen. And she's like slapping it in her hand, like kind of like, do you want to come and make a salad? And it's like, Jesus Christ, you're going to cut your hand off. And then her way of making a salad is getting out what just looks like an absolutely massive piece of steak, slicing it up randomly and throwing it in a salad bowl. And I'm like, what salad is this? I need to know.
It's
the
a
raw
salad.
Steak salad.
Yeah, it's like a steak tartare.
And then, so the douchebag husband is in the bathroom and he's like, Helen.
Three more times.
Yeah, and he's like saying Helen a lot. And then he turns the lights off, like before the last Helen, I don't know, just to be spooky, I guess. And then he's like, Helen. Boom! Helen's there. She's got her burnt head. And she's like, all right, Trev, you're a dick. And gets him with a big... She's got a big fucking hook. And she has become Mrs. Candyman.
And I... love it.
Great ending.
Great ending, great beginning, great middle, and great bits between all of those bits. Just great, I'd say.
Loved it.
Loved it. Absolutely tip top.
Would recommend.
Would recommend. Well, Tom, do you feel like the only way is up?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I don't know how you kind of... It'd be interesting to see how Candyman comes back, right? Because they did make it very tied to... Helen, and like that whole backstory bit of like that Helen is his reincarnated lover through time or whatever, and also that Helen has become a new Candyman, has maybe taken on that role. So I'd be interested to see, like, I just assume they're going to just kind of ignore some of this and they'll play some loose lip service like, oh, a spooky thing happened with Helen.
I can tell you some things that I would really want. I want it to stay in Cabrini Green, ideally,
yeah,
the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it will, but I'd like it if it did, because I love that setting. And I would love it if Virginia Madsen and Mrs. Candyman is a part of it.
But I would love that. It would be very much like Hellraiser 2, with the evil stepmom.
Yes, where she exactly, and the bloody mattress and all of that.
Yeah.
Oh. One of these days we'll do an episode on Hellraiser, guys.
Yes, yes. But... man, I can't wait.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And we don't have to, because we're going to go and watch it right now.
Right
you
now.
You people at home might have to wait a little while for that second episode to go. But we're going to go and watch it right now.
It's about lunchtime. We're going to order some food.
Candyman Day, baby!
Candyman Day, baby! So, yeah. without further ado, we're going to go off and do that. I hope you've enjoyed the return of this. If you haven't seen Candyman, go watch Candyman. It's great.
Yeah, and thanks for coming back to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan.
It's been a while.
Todd Jordan.
Oh, God, he might arrive.
Todd Jordan.
Oh, God.
I'm too scared. No,
don't do it. Todd Jordan.
It's the Bitter End Podcast with me, Todd Jordan.